This is Sportscaster.com's Open Mic with Johnny Kane on 760 WJR, featuring sports commentary and stories brought to you by the most compelling rising stars in sports broadcasting. Here's your host, Johnny Kane.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Kane. Today's date is December the 10th, and this is Open Mic. On the show today, will the announcement of a new fundraising arm known as Spartan Ventures at Michigan State place it on par with other big-time college programs? And of all the new coaching hires in college football, who made the biggest splash? And did the College Football Playoff Committee get it right? Are the days of meaningful college football bowl games a thing of the past? A lot to get to, a lot of new voices on the program, and we will start with the announcement of the new nonprofit arm called Spartan Ventures, which was announced in late October at Michigan State. According to the MSU website, Spartan Ventures and its subsidiary nonprofit tax-exempt corporation, Spartan Athletics Foundation, will focus on maximizing revenue-generating opportunities, supporting NIL opportunities for student-athletes, and establish a more focused approach to fundraising, which enhances a first-class experience for student-athletes, donors, and external partners. College athletics is evolving rapidly, and this model allows Michigan State to remain proactive, so says Jay Batt, which is Michigan State's vice president and director of athletics. He says, quote, "We will continue to prioritize our student-athletes' experience, education, and well-being while building a sustainable future for the next generation of Spartans. Spartan Ventures will provide the structure to operate with strategic innovation in a changing athletic landscape, providing the resources required for the department to achieve excellence, reclaiming our place as a top 10 athletic department nationally. I'm grateful to the Board of Trustees and President Guskovitz for their support of this modernized approach to maximizing our world-class athletics program." So what is Spartan Ventures? For a deeper dive, here's one of our newest sportscaster contributors, Noah Shimami, on all you need to know about Spartan Ventures.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back into Open Mic Radio. I'm Noah Shimami, and today we're diving into something big happening at Michigan State University, a move that's shaking up how college sports do business. So here's the headline. MSU is launching something called Spartan Ventures. It's a brand new nonprofit foundation designed to modernize the athletics department. Think of it like turning college sports into a next-level business operation. According to MSU, Spartan Ventures will focus on three main things: generating more revenue, supporting NIL opportunities for student athletes, and improving fundraising. Basically, it's a new way to help Spartan athletes make the most of their name, image, and likeness, or NIL, while also giving the school more flexibility in how it operates behind the scenes. Athletic Director Jay Batt says this setup gives MSU a competitive advantage, helping them move faster, raise more money, and adapt to a college sports world that's changing very fast. Since NIL rules came into play back in 2021, athletes have been able to make money from sponsorships, social media deals, and personal brands. Now, with Spartan Ventures, MSU can hope to give its players even more tools to succeed, while still keeping things aligned with the university's academic and compliance standards. The move also connects to a bigger trend across college sports. Schools like Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, and Oregon already have similar setups to help fundraising and NIL support. Clemson created Clemson Ventures, a for-profit company designed to handle business deals just like a private company would. So yeah, MSU is jumping into a powerful club here. On Friday, Michigan State revealed that East Lansing residents Greg and Dawn Williams pledged a total of $401 million to the university. This includes a $300 million donation, which is 10 times larger than any private donation in MSU's history. This is a huge benefit for them to help compete with other big-name schools and ultimately win an NCAA title. Williams said a big reason for the commitment is comfort with the leadership at Michigan State, including new team president Kevin Guskiewicz. One important thing to know, Spartan Ventures won't have outside investors. It'll be fully owned by Michigan State University, with oversight from a 7-member board, including trustees, the school president, the athletic director. Trustee Mike Bailo says it's fairly unique for MSU to keep them aligned with what's happening in the Big Ten. This all ties to something called revenue sharing, which started this year. For the first time, Division I schools can pay their athletes directly up to $20 million. That's a game changer because it means the line between college and pro sports just got thinner. So what does this mean for student athletes and the future of college sports? Should athletes be treated more like professionals? I mean, when it comes to branding and money, or does it take away from what college sports are supposed to be about? It could even mean more opportunities, more competition, more pressure to perform, not just on the field, but in the marketplace. Michigan State's move shows how college athletics is transforming into a full-on business venture. That's it for today's segment on Open Mic Radio. I'm Noah Shamami.
College athletics transforming into a full-on business venture. Those are the words of Noah Shamami. Again, according to the MSU website, work to fully implement and actualize Spartan Ventures and the Spartan Athletics Foundation is going to continue over the next 6 to 8 months with an expected launch in summer 2026. The university will retain full institutional oversight of all academic, compliance, and student welfare functions within athletics. New structures designed to provide greater flexibility in business operations while maintaining the values of integrity, equity, and excellence that define Michigan State University. Spartan Ventures is going to be overseen by a dedicated leadership group and the board of directors, which includes representatives from the university's administration, which ensures decisions remain aligned with institutional priorities and values. Again, that is according to the MSU website. You know, one of the biggest sports stories right now has been the coaching carousel in college football. Some of the bigger names in the Power Four have made coaching changes despite the current season still going on. The biggest certainly being Lane Kiffin leaving Ole Miss, joining LSU. That's all made possible when LSU parted ways with Brian Kelly a bit earlier. That was really the first domino that needed to fall. But University of Florida has made a change. Auburn, Arkansas, Virginia Tech, Michigan State, a lot of schools involved. And that's kind of what happens at this point in the calendar. I'm here to help clarify as one of our newest sportscaster.com contributors, JC Fox. He's a freshman sports media major at Mississippi College down in Clinton, Mississippi. And he's a proud graduate of Oakdale Academy in Waterford, Michigan. JC Fox, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yes, a lot of changes in college football this year, especially with coaches. And as coaches have to learn to adjust to the new format with NIL, the transfer portal, there's a lot more pressure than there has previously been. And some longtime coaches who were recognizable faces have been fired. Some group of five coaches gained upgraded to Power Five jobs, especially in the SEC. And then a little bit of some shifting loyalties within conferences were seen as well. And one of the coaching changes, the aspects of it rather, that really stood out to me were some faces of brands who are out of their jobs in 2025, Mike Gundy and James Franklin. Mike Gundy, the Oklahoma State coach, spent 21 seasons in Stillwater. He has the school record, 170 wins, and he had a 3-9 campaign last year, 1-2 to start this year, lost to Tulsa at the beginning of the year, and he was let go, someone who's synonymous with Oklahoma State Cowboy football. And then James Franklin, who was at Penn State for 12 seasons. He had 104 wins with the Nittany Lions and had them in the postseason top 25 seven times, but he just couldn't win the big game at Penn State, so they let him go. And while Mike Gundy is still looking for a job, James Franklin was hired at Virginia Tech, and he was brought in to bring a winning culture, a championship-level success back to that football program, as the Hokies have not won the ACC since 2017 and have just one bowl win since 2017. So they're looking for James Franklin to bring success back to the football field at Virginia Tech. And then there are also some group of five coaches getting their first crack at SEC head coaching experience. Ryan Silverfield going from Memphis to Arkansas, John Summerall going from Tulane to Florida, and then Alex Golish going from South Florida to Auburn. It is really a volatile landscape right now in the SEC conference, and that's shown by the whole Lane Kiffin saga that happened this past week. Kiffin led the Ole Miss Rebels to a 38-19 win in the Egg Bowl over Mississippi State. And after that game, the wait for his decision really began. A lot of people thought maybe Florida early on, and then Florida seemed to drop out of the Kiffin sweepstakes, if you will. LSU came out as the top dog to win over Kiffin. And it was really a 48-hour wait to see what his decision would be. A lot of meetings, a lot of drama. He's staying, he's leaving, he wants this, he wants that. So it was really an interesting time in Oxford and Baton Rouge. And one Ole Miss fan I talked to, once it was announced that Kiffin would leave Ole Miss and he'd be the next head coach of the LSU Tigers, said, "You can't blame him for taking the job. We're just very frustrated with the way he went about it." But in Oxford, there's still hope. Pete Golding was promoted from the defensive coordinator to the permanent head coach this past weekend. And the Rebels should be in the college football playoff. They had a very impressive season, almost made to the SEC championship game. So it'll be interesting to watch that story through December and January. And then for me, probably the most intriguing story of this college football coaching carousel, if you will, is Jonathan Smith out at Michigan State, Pat Fitzgerald in. The former Northwestern coach, Pat Fitzgerald, was fired in 2023 from the Wildcats, but he has 65 Big Ten wins on his resume. He led his Wildcat teams to the Big Ten championship game a couple times. They had 5 appearances in the postseason, top 25. He had a lot of success at Northwestern. And Pat Fitzgerald, more than anyone, knows how to do more with less. And the Big Ten, really, especially Michigan, is dominated by Michigan and then Ohio State for recruiting. So Pat Fitzgerald will have to battle with those two powerhouses in the recruiting scene. But he knows how to do it, and this move has prompted mixed emotions in the Spartans locker room and the Spartans fan base. One player said, quote, "Pat Fitzgerald is a home run hire. People might not realize it yet, but they will." And then another player commented saying, quote, "Love the Fitzgerald hire. MSU needs a coach who can build a program and establish a strong culture back in East Lansing. He's routinely done more with less," end quote. And that's really what the story is here, more than less. How does that translate with Pat Fitzgerald? He's a coach who's willing to adapt and change and knows how to win. And it seems that the Michigan State locker room and their fan base are very excited for this hire. And even though there have been a lot of coaching changes, there were also a lot of coaches who were signed to massive extensions, as there were rumors floating around about, would they get hired here? Would they get hired there? Kurt Cignetti, Eli Drinkwitz, Clark Lee, Mike Elko, Matt Rhule, and a whole host of others were rumored for a lot of open jobs, but that earned them massive extensions at their school. So the pressure's on for them now to win and to keep the boosters happy. But as we look at all this, the question might be, why are there all these changes? Why does this feel so chaotic? And a couple reasons could be NIL pressure. And now it's boosters pressuring you and the athletic department. That has really changed college football. The transfer portal, the ability to keep players, retain them on your roster, but also recruit guys from other teams. And then still a little bit of conference movement stuff going on. As conferences get bigger, teams have to cement their identity and find ways to win in conferences that are becoming harder and harder to win in. So if 2025 is any indication of the way coaching is going to be for the foreseeable future, there are a whole bunch of rapid changes, not just on the field, but in the sidelines, the recruiting offices, the boosters. And for fans, that means some uncertainty, some excitement, and maybe a few shockers. For players, especially those considering entering the transfer portal, it could ultimately reshape their collegiate career entirely.
Very well done, very well researched. And I'm with you. I feel like we're living in a stage, change is imminent, change is coming, but this is the way that it is right now. And it almost feels like there's such a flurry. There's so much investment involved. And I'm not talking about just like emotional investment, but like you mentioned, the boosters and the athletic programs and NIL. Like everybody wants a cut of this stuff. And it's like, we need to win now more than ever. Like you got to win today, win recruiting, win the transfer portal, win your conference, win a national championship, win over the boosters. And the timeline for that, like you mentioned, Jonathan Smith at Michigan State, you know, used to be you get about 4 years to bring in your own recruits, develop and move. Now nobody has 4 year recruits anymore. So like Kurt Cignetti is the unicorn because of what he's been able to do at Indiana, where he proved, hey, you can come into a place that's on, I think you would say, on a level of like a Michigan State in the Big Ten Conference. And he runs it back and puts an undefeated season together in year two after advancing to the playoff a year ago. But that probably, rather than saying, well, that's the expectation for all these other schools that you mentioned that have gone to a new coaching hire, you know, he's different. But it's just fascinating to me as we work through this thing and then, you know, how this is going to evolve in the college game and the calendar in years ahead. But this is the way that it is right now and teams are capitalizing right now. I like the hire of Pat Fitzgerald at Michigan State. We'll see how it plays out, obviously. But obviously, if you can win at the Big Ten, which he's proven to do at a place like Northwestern, I think he'll do well in East Lansing. But to your point, JC, you know, it's one thing recruiting in the Chicago area in the backyard. And now you say, okay, now you get to East Lansing and you got to out-recruit Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Indiana, and everybody else. You know, it'd be tough sledding for them, but I guess we'll just see how it all plays out. Very good, man. And I look forward to having you on the show a little bit further down the line. Maybe we'll do, once we get into the middle of next college football season, we can reflect on some of these, the hires that have been made at the Auburns, Ole Misses, Arkansas, and Michigan States, and we'll reset.
Yes, it'll be very, very interesting to see how this all unfolds and what happens, especially next season.
A lot happening across college football with a number of major college football programs making head coaching changes, one of those being Pat Fitzgerald at Michigan State. We told you about Spartan Ventures earlier in the program, the new nonprofit arm of MSU Athletics with the hopes of generating revenue to put that school on par with other schools in this new world of college athletics. And it really follows a more business-like model than ever before. And now we come to the college football playoff. Now, you don't need me to tell you that college bowl games, unfortunately, don't mean what they once did. It's all about the playoff now. So quick history, college football adopted the four-team playoff during the 2014 season. That existed for 10 years. And then every year, if you remember, you know, there was clamoring to expand the playoff, which they did last season. Introduced the 12-team playoff. And invariably, whether it's four teams, 12 teams, 16 teams, 24 teams, somebody will be left on the cut line and somebody's going to have issues with being left out. For more on that, we welcome in one of our newest sportscaster contributors, Emil Asaf.
I'm Emil Asaf. I am a TCU alum and I run a social media called Analytics Sports. And it's a huge time in the college football world right now. The college football playoff has been selected, and there's a lot of controversy. Obviously, Notre Dame being left out, that is the big headline, as they were a team that was in the top 10 almost throughout the entire season. But in the last moment, the committee decides to put in some different teams as a result of conference championship weekend. Now, I want to start with the inconsistency that we saw from the committee. I'm not necessarily mad at the committee for putting in Miami over Notre Dame, but rather for how they treated some other teams that had similar criteria. We'll start with Alabama. Alabama is a team that has three losses on the season. One of their biggest losses was this conference championship against Georgia, where they lost 28-7. And ultimately, the committee decided to not punish them at all for this conference championship appearance. They say that you earn the right to play in a game as big as the SEC title game, but this wasn't the case for BYU. BYU is a team that was also in their conference championship in the Big 12. They were 11-1 going into it, with their only loss being to Texas Tech, ranked top three in the country, which they happened to lose again. BYU moved down from being the number 11 team in the country, according to the CFP, down to number 12 as a result of their loss in the conference championship game. Alabama did not move at all, being the number 9 team and getting into the playoff despite more losses, despite their biggest win being Georgia, who just stomped them in the conference championship game. And BYU doesn't get a shot at the playoff as a result of them getting embarrassed in the national stage in the Big 12 championship game. And the reason why I'm talking about inconsistency is not necessarily because BYU deserved the spot. It's because there is a sense of bias in Alabama not being punished while BYU did get punished. I think the way for this to go should have been to either do this, not punish Alabama at all and leave them at that 9 spot, not punish BYU at all and put them into the college football playoff, or put Miami into the college football playoff. They have the head-to-head against Notre Dame, who was ranked number 10 in last week's college football playoff ranking, and also include Notre Dame, punishing both teams that ended up losing during conference championship weekend in very bad fashion. I think the answer, though, what the college football playoff committee is really looking at is the quality of wins that these teams had versus the losses necessarily that they had. Alabama, who did not move that much, had that win against Georgia, a top five team at the moment, had a win against Vanderbilt when they were undefeated and were off to their best start in the history of the program. They play in an SEC that is a gauntlet. They had a win against Missouri as well. That's why they're in. It's not necessarily championship weekend. It's not necessarily the three losses. That's why they're in. And that leaves us with the debate between Miami and Notre Dame, where, again, Notre Dame, despite not having the head-to-head, was above Miami every single week until BYU moved down and they were right next to each other. So with that said, here are the strength of record and the strength of schedule for Notre Dame and for Miami. Notre Dame had the 13th strength of record in the country, while Miami had the 14th strength of record. The strength of schedule for Notre Dame was 42nd, while Miami's was 44th. And once again, the marquee win that Miami had was beating a number 6 ranked Notre Dame at the time and having that head-to-head against them. The argument for Notre Dame right now is, well, they lost to Texas A&M by 1 point when they were ranked number 7 in the country right now. They only lost to Miami by 3 points. But ultimately, if you're a team that's not in a conference and has the opportunity to get a big-time win against a powerhouse in college football like A&M, or like Miami has been in the past, and you don't do it, it doesn't matter by how little or how much you lose by. It's about actually winning that game. Did Miami end up losing some pretty bad games? That being Louisville, that being SMU. Yes, they did, but they play in a Power Four conference, have the same record, have a very similar resume that Notre Dame has. So ultimately, they get in. That takes me to Texas, right? There's a big argument out there that Texas should have gotten a spot in the college football playoff, definitely from their fan base, and especially down here living in Texas, hearing these guys. The biggest argument with that is they played Ohio State week one. If they would have played anybody else, they would have 2 losses. They would have an amazing win against Texas A&M. They would have had a great win against Vanderbilt, among other wins. But those same people will bash BYU for having an easy schedule and for defeating teams in the Big 12 like TCU, like Utah, a top 15 team, being their best win, when those are supposed to be the games that you do win. Those games, Texas wasn't able to take care of. Not only did Texas lose to Ohio State and lose to Georgia in terrible fashion, they lost to 4-8 Florida, but they want to discredit BYU for going through a schedule and absolutely flying through it outside of Texas Tech. College football is a landscape where you cannot take any week for granted, right? So that brings me back to my argument about BYU. It doesn't matter who you play week to week. If you win 11 games in a Power Four conference, in a conference that you can't really assume every week is a free W, you should be in the playoff. And that same logic for Texas saying, hey, well, if we would have scheduled so-and-so, if we would have scheduled Rice instead of Ohio State, we would be 10-2. Well, no, you didn't go to 4-8 Florida and beat them. That's my big issue with the Texas argument. But like I said, ultimately, I do think the committee, despite a little bit of the inconsistencies, they put the best teams in. Miami and Notre Dame were the most comparable out of the teams that kind of got left out. Now, with Notre Dame, they did make the national championship last year. They have a great young quarterback in Carr. They have probably the best running back in the country in Jeremiah Love. But this is the start of a movement to push them to either continue to schedule hard games as the season goes along, because they played service academies. They did not play a lot of bowl-eligible teams, ultimately, they didn't have any top 10 ranked wins. And that's what it comes down to. With Notre Dame, they're either going to have to join a conference, and that's the message that the committee is sending, or they're going to have to stop scheduling Arkansas, who was at the bottom of the SEC. They're going to have a better win than USC, who was ranked number 20 at the time and ended up winning single-digit games. I think Notre Dame was rightfully left out. That is the number one thing on the priority of the College Football Playoff Committee. That is the one thing that would have made a lot of fans upset, that would have made me upset, because going on a 10-game win streak does matter, like I just mentioned. So if you value that 10-game win streak whenever you're playing a bunch of schools that are not ranked in the top 15, then the committee should have valued BYU a lot higher, being in a Power Four conference, only losing to top three Texas Tech. Now, I want to talk about the format a little bit as well. It gets thrown out there that this team deserves it or this team deserves it. I believe there are only six deserving teams in the college football playoff right now. And moving from the four-team format, where you would have had to leave out most likely either Ohio State after just losing their single game against Indiana, now ranked number one, or you would have had to leave out Texas A&M after a perfect season where they're 11-0 going to Austin. The Longhorns are on a hot streak and they end up losing that game. Or Ole Miss only lost to SEC champion Georgia, and that was an 8-point loss. But you probably leave them out because of their coach. So this format of 12 teams, it's not necessarily because teams 12-7 deserve a shot, right? It's more about sometimes there's more than four teams that deserve a shot at the national championship, and we're doing that for them. Everybody else can just be glad to be included. That includes Alabama, who we just talked about with three losses, right? Miami with two, Notre Dame with two. In the former eras, if you lose one game, you are thankful for a magical season that you had as a team, as a program, and you go and play a different bowl game where you're not contending for the national championship. And that's the end of it. This is a new era that college football fans and college football programs have to appreciate, not just because of NIL, but because the expanded playoff gives a chance to multiple teams after one blunder. The problem is once you get past that one, if you're Texas with three losses, including 4-8 Florida, you're not deserving anymore. If you're Notre Dame with two losses to start out the season, especially Miami, who's one of the contending teams, and Texas A&M, you can't really blame anybody else but yourself. Now, I talk about those deserving teams because ultimately that to me is who is going to end up in the semifinals. It's not going to be any of the JMUs at 12 or Tulane at 11 or even Oklahoma being an 8 seed despite the incredible season that they had. I think Texas Tech has been so dominant and dominated BYU twice this season. Lost a game against Arizona State where they were playing against a backup quarterback with ASU's quarterback Sam Leavitt not being in the lineup. A team like that, Texas Tech, is going to dominate so much, they'll be in the semifinal regardless of whether they play Oregon or JMU. Indiana, not too many people believed in Coach Cignetti until these last 2 years with him coming over from JMU. But against all odds in the Big Ten championship, they defeat Ohio State, the defending champions, on a huge win streak. They're one of those teams that it doesn't matter who they play, whether that's Alabama or Oklahoma. They're going to be a team that's in the semifinal. And of course, we saw what Georgia just did to Alabama, avenging their only loss of the season, a close game in week 6 where they lose by a field goal at home. They come out and they absolutely stomp this Alabama team in the SEC championship. And now all they have to go through is either Ole Miss without Lane Kiffin or Tulane, who also lost two games in the regular season playing in the American. That win against North Texas for Tulane was a great win. It gets them in the college football playoff. But this is not a team that's competing with those six deserving teams that we talked about. Same with Ohio State. They get the winner of A&M and Miami. That's the only one that could be complicated for this Ohio State team, with Indiana being really the only super tough game that they've played. They had a win in the game against Michigan, where Michigan had a little bit of a down year. They didn't get to double-digit wins. But other than that, they're not as tested this season by itself as these other teams. Regardless of that, it's going to be the top four that end up making it to the semifinals. And again, very few teams are deserving of competing for a national championship, while the other ones should just be happy to be included. Now, we'll make our final point just about these last two teams that entered the college football playoff, because there was an ACC team in Duke that snuck into the conference championship and ended up beating Virginia. And some people argued they had a case for the college football playoff despite being a five-loss team. Of course, they were able to get in due to a five-way tiebreaker against Miami, Georgia Tech, a bunch of these ACC teams that were 6-2 in the conference. Really weird tiebreaker rules. It ends up being Virginia at 7-1 in the conference that gets in, and Duke at 6-2. If you put a conference champion, which that would have been the case in the past, if you put a conference champion automatically in and they automatically get a bye, we would have seen Tulane get a bye. And that just can't happen. And with Duke, if you can lose five games and still somehow make the final 12-team college football playoff bracket, then there's no point in playing the games. Those losses, those out-of-conference losses, those other losses have to have a downside. And that goes back to my point also about Texas, for example, scheduling Ohio State, Notre Dame scheduling A&M in Miami. If you wanted the benefit of the win, of having a marquee win early in the season, you have to be able to take the downside of not winning that game, and that is having an L on your record. I will give a shout out to Duke for being able to pull off that game against Virginia, ACC champions in overtime. Huge shout out to them. Not a college football playoff deserving team, and there's only very few teams that were truly deserving. We are stuck in an era where there should be an in-between. I think 12 teams is too much. I think four teams before was too little, but this thing keeps adapting year to year. So far, the inconsistencies from the committee have been pretty bad. We got to decide, we're going to punish teams for playing championship weekend, or we're not going to punish them at all. We got to decide, do we prioritize head-to-head, or do we prioritize whether a team was blowing out their opponents when they have similar resumes? In this case, only one team was punished, and that was BYU in comparison to Alabama. Miami ends up getting in because of the head-to-head against Notre Dame, and I'm glad it went that way. BYU kind of took for granted the fact that they were able to beat opponents week to week. But despite all that, I think this is going to be a great college football playoff. The top dogs are the ones that are deserving. Texas Tech, Indiana, Georgia, Ohio State. I'll even include Oregon in there, only having one loss against Indiana. A&M, only having one loss against the Longhorns on the road. And Ole Miss, one loss against Georgia. It's unfortunate that they lost their coach, but this is going to be an exciting playoff amongst the top dogs. Everyone else should just be happy to be included. Thank you guys once again. I'm Emil Asaf, aka Analytics Sports on social media. Thank you to Sportscaster for connecting me with this opportunity. And I hope you guys are happy with the college football playoff results, and we get to enjoy this exciting part of the season together. Thank you.
And thank you, Emil. That was Sportscaster.com's Emil Asaf. Brings up a lot of good points here. You know, is a 12-team playoff too much? Should it expand? Maybe contract to 8 teams? And does it bother you that bowls don't seem to matter anymore, at least in terms of what they used to mean? Opting not to participate in bowl games this season, Notre Dame, Iowa State, Kansas State, Kansas, Florida State, Auburn, UCF, Baylor, Rutgers, Temple. It's really the haves and have-nots. You know, for some schools and their athletes, the opportunity to play in a showcase for these seniors, the last time they'll put on a college football jersey, it should matter. But for some of the schools listed above, if they're not in the running for a national championship, they say, why bother? Now, some schools are going through coaching changes, and obviously every situation is different, but, you know, I don't like it, to be frank. There's now a shortage of bowl-eligible teams. For example, 5-7 Appalachian State will play Georgia Southern in the Birmingham Bowl after a number of other 5-7 teams turned down that opportunity. Now, I love bowl season, but there's a decreased importance, and now some view the bowls as simply glorified exhibitions. You know, one thing we've learned, obviously, over the course of time is that things do change, things constantly evolving. I mentioned they had the 4-team playoff for a decade. Now we're in this current 12-team format. Again, with NIL, the transfer portal, college coaching changes across the landscape. Like, everything is changing. Obviously, colleges are now operating more in a business-like fashion. So I don't know where it's going to go. All we can deal with is the way it currently looks today. I don't necessarily love it. I love college bowl season. I know a lot of our listeners do as well. But, you know, even the names of bowls, I mean, you can kind of scoff at some of that stuff, you know, like the importance of playing in a Pop-Tarts bowl as opposed to playing in a Rose Bowl. Does it carry the same weight? Some of these schools are willing to take on the fines that are being levied by their own conferences by refusing to participate in a bowl. And then you see other schools like Vandy. They say, we love to play football. We're going to play. So, you know, if you love the sport, more games, the better, in my opinion. But again, if we know anything about college football and the landscape, it is ever changing. And who knows what is to come in the years ahead. I do want to thank all our guests this week. Emil Asaf, the TCU graduate, for his commentary on the current 12-team playoff and how it affects the bowl picture. J.C. Fox from Mississippi College on the coaching carousel in college football. And Noah Shimami from Full Sail University about the inner workings of the new nonprofit arm called Spartan Ventures in East Lansing. That's going to do it for our show this week. I'm Johnny Kane. We'll be back with you again next Wednesday night right here on Open Mic. And until then, Godspeed.